It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Okay, we're going to be talking about a new confederation of groups that's coming about called Symbiosis. There's already a local chapter up in Portland. We're going to be talking about the work that they're doing. It's bringing together kind of a wide variety of groups that have been around for a while, everything from Woodbine out in New York to Demand Utopia in Portland to groups like Black Socialists of America, long-running organizations like Cooperation Jackson. We're going to be talking about a conference that they're going to be holding this summer based around the idea of building dual power. And we're just going to get into it. What's happening, kind of the ideas behind these groups, what kind of work they see, the organizing that lies ahead of them. But do you just all want to introduce yourselves real quick?
My name's Mason. I'm an organizer with Symbiosis in Detroit, Michigan.
I'm Leighton Buzzard with Demand Utopia and Symbiosis PDX.
Okay, great. And we've had people from Demand Utopia on in the past. Welcome back. And, you know, there's a wide variety of groups that are taking part in this, both in the upcoming Congress this summer and also just in Symbiosis as it grows. You know, as we already said, groups like Demand Utopia, who have been highly influenced by the Rojavan Revolution, also DSA, Libertarian Socialist Caucus, Woodbine out of New York, which kind of comes out of the Tikkunis and Apolista traditions. There's kind of new formations like Black Socialists of America, as well as long-running groups, like we already said, Cooperation Jackson. So the stated goal of the movement is to build something beyond a local level that can build dual power. Can you tell us more about the goals of Symbiosis and just in general, what does it hope to achieve?
Yeah, so a number of organizers in local projects like these have been having discussions over the past several years about how we were kind of limited by our localness and, you know, the need for each new group to start from ground zero where they are and continuously reinvent the wheel in a sort of way. So we figured that it would be worthwhile and important to begin developing some connective tissue between these local organizations to share experiences and resources and knowledge and begin to crystallize a sort of shared platform for visibility that would be able to more effectively seed new projects in other places around North America. And ultimately, we think this kind of organizing structure beyond the local is necessary because capitalism in the States are organized beyond the local level. And if we're going to build a movement for democracy that can actually win, we need to be building power at scale as well. So right now, the function of Symbiosis is really just to lay the groundwork for a North American confederation that we hope is going to be kicked off at this Congress in 6 months. And, you know, in the meantime, our organizations are working together to plan that and to begin, practicing some of these democratic decision-making processes between our different local groups.
And how did these groups start talking to each other? Because this is a pretty wide swath. I mean, obviously there's some political affinity, you know, there. But, I mean, this is kind of a wide swath of organizations that are involved. How did you all kind of come together and find common ground?
The original container for these conversations were some week-long intensives put on by the Institute for Social Ecology back in the summer of 2017. And so some organizers from some of these different Pacific Northwest organizations like Portland Assembly and Olympia Assembly and Seattle Neighborhood Action Coalition and others from the Northeast or Detroit met at those and were talking about how we were at similar stages in the development of our local movements and you know had extended discussions about what kind of limitations we're coming up against. So out of those, we pulled together a crew of folks who from all across mostly U.S. and Canada who wanted to really kick this project into high gear. So and that's what became Symbiosis. And so we've had kind of an ongoing outreach program of you know building relationships with other groups. You know, brought on Cooperation Jackson in that early stage, and other allies have come to us, and really just gone from there.
Real quick, let's just define the concept of dual power, because this is kind of going to be what we'll be talking about through the rest of the conversation, more or less. So, how would we define dual power?
I would define dual power as the bifurcation of political authority between the state, you know, the representative or institutions of official governance on one hand, and then the grassroots, more robustly democratic institutions of working class self-governance on the other. And dual power is when you have a contestation for legitimacy between these two two institutional blocks of political authority. And you know the goal is to organize these institutions of participatory democracy that can supplant and displace, you know, hierarchical modes of social organization.
Kind of along the lines of the old Wobbly slogan, building the new world in the shell of the old.
Exactly, yeah.
I think definitely some of the inspirations, the groups that were most inspired by, are groups like Cooperation Jackson, people involved in the Rojava Revolution, the kind of structures they set up there to include people in the wider society into making this happen and engaging them and not just kind of staying in our own bubbles, but also, you know, creating models that work and that show that they can work and that will interest people in being involved in them. That's kind of one of the main tenets as well.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, I mean, we really need to have Cooperation Jackson come on this show, but, you know, we've mentioned them a couple times already just because they're kind of a group that's been around for so long and done a lot of good work. Can we just talk a little bit about them and what they do?
Sure. Though to be clear, the organization called Cooperation Jackson has only existed since 2014. Although it's been building on, you know, decades of organizing work in Jackson, Mississippi. But in essence, Cooperation Jackson came out of some different layers of radical movement building in Mississippi. You know, the defining program is to build black working class control over the means of production in Jackson, and you know, develop the infrastructure of a genuinely democratic and socialist society from the bottom up. So the main components of their work is a cooperative incubator and a organization that exists to bring in credit and financing for worker-owned businesses, provide them with technical support to become operational, and then foster a mutually supportive ecosystem of community-owned and worker-owned local economy. And then one of the other central components is developing a political infrastructure of people's assemblies that are spaces of direct, deliberative, democratic decision-making outside of municipal government that can be the kind of institutional nucleus of grassroots power in the city. And that's been around, that's what they've been organizing people around and into over the past several decades. And that's kind of the heart of their dual power model are these people's assemblies. They've also been working on different projects like developing a community land trust, which is a legal structure for the cooperative ownership of land, and are using that to develop affordable housing and serve as a buffer against gentrification and so forth.
I'd like to suggest a video that we're going to show at our upcoming event, the East Portland Housing Assembly, that it goes into it pretty well. It's only about a half an hour long. It's called Cooperation Jackson, Building a Solidarity Economy. And it really gets into like kind of the central tenets of their organizing strategy, the history of Jackson, Mississippi, and, you know, give some information on that.
Great. Yeah. And again, we'll have to have them on the show sometime. We'll have to reach out. It's definitely on our list. And, but just to kind of continue forward, I think this is a critical question too. So you said the goal of the group is to build dual power beyond the local level. So I'm just curious, you know, what would that look like in theory? So if we were going to try to build something beyond just, you know, your city or your neighborhood or your block, I mean, what would a project like that entail in theory or as an example?
Well, you can think about it on a couple of different scales. You know, even within a single city, most cities are large enough that building a kind of municipal movement is in a way organizing beyond the local. If we're starting from, you know, genuinely grassroots institutions like individual tenant unions and community councils at the neighborhood, at the block level, we need to confederate beyond those hyper-local organizations into a city-wide base of power that can contest for power within municipal politics and seek to transform the way in which the city is run. That's a way of scaling up our organization from the neighborhood level to the city level, as a means of actually being able to take real power. I think there's a degree to which you can take that further. You know, that this can be a regional question or even a metropolitan question, because lots of major metro areas are actually composed of many different municipalities that, and you know, there's with common issues and problems. One like long-term model that influences a lot of people in symbiosis is Bookchin's conception of libertarian municipalism, and the idea of libertarian municipalism of beyond the local is that once directly democratic people's assemblies have taken control of the city, then cities themselves begin to federate and work with one another to manage political problems beyond their immediate local scope, but then also begin to form a sort of interurban dual power structure with the nation state. And the goal there is to develop the kind of institutional decision making power to be able to displace the nation state as a model of social organization. I think that's like quite a bit far out from the kind of beyond the local that we're feasibly able to do. Although there are organizations within our network that have gotten people into elected office, none of them could reasonably be described as having seized the city. And so there are lots of interim forms in which we can be mutually supportive at the scale of the network. Some of those things I mentioned previously, like sharing resources. One of the things that we really want to do is have a kind of common visible platform by which people can see things like Cooperation Jackson or Olympia Assembly and say, oh, I want to do that in my community. Where do I even go? And have there be something to absorb that that political energy and resource it properly and give people the skills and guidance to be able to actually replicate and adapt those politics into their local context. One of the other things that we've discussed doing is a sort of organizer exchange program, like have people from one community organization switch with some folks in another as a kind of delegation and build up their skill sets and organize in a different context and help bind the relationships between our groups that way. There's in all likelihood will be the need for coordinated activity politically, even if we're not contesting necessarily for power from the state just yet. There's lots of campaigns that will need agitation from the grassroots across many different localities, and the better organized and coordinated we are, the more effective we're going to be that way.
And I'd say in terms of examples that we're inspired by of building dual power, we said like Demand Utopia and some people in Symbiosis PDX, is the Rojava Revolution. And, there's about 4.5 million people who live under a system that is essentially what Bookchin was, laying out, in the 70s and 80s. They kind of took it to heart, a lot of people here have been reading his stuff for the longest time, and maybe a few people tried a few things here and there, but, it took, Oppo, and, the PKK to start, looking at these structures and how they can be organized within the society they're working in and actually, be successful in it. I mean, different context, which maybe made it easier. Like, people weren't as cynical. They were looking for an alternative that they really had no choice. They couldn't escape into, online life or TV. They had to figure out how to survive in a society that was basically a dictatorship. So what some of the structures that are active in Rojava is these communes. They call them communes. We basically call them neighborhood groups. There's about 500 people or so in each commune. They're all their own kind of autonomous political entities. They have the ultimate authority for what goes on in their neighborhood. So it's kind of like, as hierarchy and, the state capitalism, the way we operate right now, the ultimate authority is in the executive at the top. They have the ultimate say in what happens. With communalism, the ultimate authority is at the lowest level. So all the levels of coordination above that are subservient to what's happening at the local level. The communes typically will have a few subcommittees that will deal with things like health, political life. In Rojava, there's been a big emphasis on the women's revolution and women's liberation. So there's typically women's councils that kind of coordinate and like direct, you know, things in a certain way. There's also community self-defense. Basically, anything that you would need to survive in a society, they have like a subcommittee and a council operating around that that topic. And then, you know, they meet about every week, probably more, but, you know, at least once a week to coordinate the activities of local life. And then as it's needed, another layer of coordination is added to that. You know, then it's like neighborhood level, it's village level, city level, and they've gotten all the way to where they have this federation of 4 million people who operate in northern Syria. And at least Demand Utopia, we want to bring more light to that because we think it's an amazing example, you know, probably maybe the best example since, you know, Spain in the 1930s of a non-state society that's actually functioning.
Yeah, and actually sees its goal as, you know, not building a state, but being autonomous. Well, just moving on, you know, a lot of people that are involved in Symbiosis participated in another conference called Fearless Cities. I'm just curious, I believe one of y'all went to that. If you could just talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So Fearless Cities is an emerging network that's come out of Barcelona and Camus, which is a municipalist project in Barcelona, which has a rich movement history of direct democratic participation with quite a landscape of people's assemblies. And so there were a number of different local movements that came together to launch this program of Barcelona in Common, Barcelona and Camus, and actually took majority power in the city, and have been trying to wield that.
Just to be clear, you say take majority power in the city, you mean like through elections or?
Through elections, yes. They didn't overthrow the municipal government, but they elected, you know, their mayoral candidate and a lot of their city council. I'm not sure what their equivalent of city council is, but so they have been trying to foster relationships with other municipalist projects elsewhere around the world, really. So the first Fearless Cities conference took place in Barcelona in 2017. They had, you know, folks from Jackson and from Portland and from across Europe and such come to discuss their common struggles. And so then in this past year, in 2018, they split it up into two regional conferences. They had Fearless Cities North America, which we participated in New York City. And then there was also Fearless Cities Europe in Warsaw, Poland. So Fearless Cities North America kind of took place as a fairly standard conference with you know, people from all kinds of different groups showing up to give workshops and panels and, you know, foster relationships with one another and form those kinds of connections. Symbiosis hosted our first in-person network gathering there, where we had a lot of excellent input for, you know, planning our own Congress the following year. And, you know, different member organizations of Symbiosis participate in different ways with their own panels and such. And then we've had some of our members involved in the ongoing Fearless Cities North America Steering Committee.
And then what's going to happen this summer? There's going to be a founding Congress for Symbiosis, and what's the goal kind of coming out of that conference this summer?
The goal is to launch a standing confederation of our different local projects. So right now we kind of conceive of Symbiosis as this interim organization, a structure that's kind of put together as we go to lay this groundwork and to ensure that we can all come together in the same place. But we think it's really important for this, for whatever results out of this, to be the product of a deliberative and participatory democratic process where all of these different community organizations have a direct voice in shaping. So the Congress is really the real thing for launching a the organization beyond the local scale. And we hope to accomplish some other things in the process, you know, like foster relationships between our groups and begin developing and sharing common resources. But the central goal is to come out of that with having devised the structure of the federation or confederation between our groups that can be the institutional nucleus of our wider movement.
Symbiosis itself is made up of a wide range of tendencies, but, you know, we've already brought up this term several times in this conversation. It has a strong municipalist current, a tendency that seems to have been growing, especially with the growing interest in what's happening in Rojava and kind of a return to the ideas of Murray Bookchin. And, you know, kind of within the wider anarchist, autonomous, anti-authoritarian movement, this has kind of led to some controversy as some municipalists have embraced the idea of running local elections. You brought up what was going on in Barcelona. I'm just kind of curious, you know, what are your thoughts on this?
That's a great question. I mean, I think this is something that's going to necessarily vary pretty significantly from across local contexts. But I think the underlying principles, you know, there are commonalities across contexts that we can pull out, cause it is an inherent tension and a dilemma that lots of groups are grappling with in different ways. So one thing that we have to recognize is that generally speaking, putting our people into office has more of a structural effect on them than they do on the office. There's a recuperative effect to representative democracy, and it's kind of a built-in danger. I think that this is a result of all kinds of structural pressures that are put on people in office, and one of the only ways that I see of resisting that is to turn our base of power into a structural pressure in itself that can counterbalance those other forces. So, for example, we want to make sure that when we are pushing any kind of electoral campaign, we need to have built the and organized the popular power outside of the state that can actually hold those candidates to account. We can't just assume that smart people who share their values will do what we want when they're in office because we ask them to. We need to have built the leverage to be able to affect that. And you know that's one of the guiding the central debates of what's been taking place in Jackson. There were lots of disagreements whether they were ready to run candidates for municipal office, because they elected one of their leaders to be a city council person and the mayor, and then now his son has been elected the mayor. And the debate was not really should we run for office or not.
You're talking about in Jackson, Mississippi. I mean, you're talking about a very seen as almost a radical person that's been elected to mayor, I believe, right?
Yes.
This is something that's been on Democracy Now! A lot of times and kind of held up as this like progressive icon.
Absolutely, yeah. But the debate they were having is, do we have the power outside of the state to be able to leverage a seat in office?
Not to play devil's advocate too hard, because I want to, give you the space to articulate what you're saying. I guess the thing that a lot of people would say is that obviously if a social movement has the push behind it to elect somebody, then wouldn't we be better off just building dual power? Because if that's the ultimate goal, is to create a movement that basically can replace the political with something that's autonomous and then therefore basically take over society, then why would we basically then also put our toe inside of, being part of the state? Wouldn't that kind of negate what the ultimate goal is?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of other reasons why we have to take seriously the question of contesting for power electorally. First is that the power that we can build in that, self-directed, autonomous way is shaped by all kinds of underlying conditions, and some of those are really hostile to our ability to organize effectively. I mean, like the, for example, in Michigan, there's a lot of local solidarity economy efforts around developing community-owned solar energy, which is, an absolutely essential part of any kind of, cooperative economy that can, displace capitalist utilities and, provide a sound ecological basis for our common future. The problem is that the regulatory environment in which that takes place is so hostile to any kind of community ownership, that it's actually just illegal, and it, we can't actually do the fundraising to develop that kind of infrastructure in the first place. So I think there's lots of areas in which particular reforms will never be sufficient in themselves to transform the system and allow our grassroots institutions to take over all of society, but can nevertheless create openings in which we are better situated to do that, you know, more revolutionary work. I think there's similar thing to be said for instance, the safety net and the ways in which austerity have left people in many working class communities in pretty dire situations. And in those contexts, it's actually very difficult to organize people who don't have the available free time or the household resources to be able to participate in political life in ways that go beyond ensuring their ongoing survival, and ways in which, like, we can use or in which, like, social democratic movements can reduce the vulnerability of ordinary people. We're in a much better place to achieve more transformative changes in the economy and in society. At the municipal level, one of the particular reasons why I think electoral politics are important to grapple with is because there's in some cases, like, a relatively straightforward pathway to transforming how municipalities are governed. So, for example, if your most cities have some kind of charter that sets up, it's like their municipal constitution. Those are really strategic targets to move forward, because, you know, our goal is not, in most cases, is not to dissolve governance itself, but to restructure in a radically democratic form that is guided by the direct self-governance of people in face-to-face democracy. In Detroit, for example, we're about to reopen our charter for an amendment process. And even though this won't revolutionize the governance of Detroit, there's openings for us to push elected officials to support things like participatory budgeting being a part of the future municipal charter, and giving these council districts their own kind of devolved budgetary powers that would make it easier for ordinary people to have a direct say in how public resources are spent in their communities. And those are kind of some stepping stones to a democratized city. I think that there are lots of ways in which organizing a mass movement, a dual power movement, looks very similar, both when you have someone in office and when you don't. And I think that's really important to get across to people who kind of think of getting someone elected as their silver bullet. You're never going to be able to just have an elected person do everything you want. We need to have that kind of popular power outside the state to, be able to force their hand just the same as anyone else. But some hands are easier to force than others.
I would say that, I mean, there needs to be a little breakdown in the kind of the black and white duality of, like, oh, you anti-authoritarian, you have to be, like, or, like, never cooperating or never using any state structures, or even, like, you know, the possibility of influencing state structures to change things. because, you know, I think Symbiosis, at least Symbiosis PDX, we've explicitly said that we will embrace insider-outsider strategies, particularly on a local level where there is, you know, it's a scale where you can possibly see some real differences. And, like, the main thing is it opening space for more organizing to happen? And occasionally, say you get, like, a city council member or a mayor in a smaller city elected, they can go a long way to changing some of those policies or, like, mobilizing people around your ideas. And the most important thing is putting, like, kind of the ideas in the program that you're trying to enact out there for people to see. And then, like, the politician is sort of an appendage to this. This should never be, like, the main goal is getting people elected. But if that will open space for more work to be done, we shouldn't also turn ourselves off to that possibility. And in some places, you know, like, I know, like, maybe 20 years ago or so, like, there was an anarchist that got elected to, like, city council in, like, Lake Worth, Florida. And it's kind of like, just see what happens, see what you can do. Don't be afraid just because there's this dogma that you shouldn't do that because your ideology tells you that you should stay away from that. And even in the past, like, people don't know this, but even, like, too much, but back in the 30s even, occasionally the CNT would tell their members to participate in elections if they saw that it was going to help the wider cause of the revolution.
Yeah, I mean, generally that was for, like, releasing political prisoners.
I believe they also took part in an election to abolish the monarchy in the 30s.
Yeah, but that's true.
They were, like, so they lived in, you know, the real world. They weren't living in a world of ideas, pure ideas. Like, they, you know, I wouldn't advocate even, like, national level elections, but they saw that they needed to do that at that time, and they did it. So we also shouldn't be afraid of that kind of engagement. And also, I feel like in Portland, like, the last couple years, we've had a couple of new city council people elected who, as a reaction to kind of the major gentrification project that's been going on, basically won because of that. They're basically saying, we're against displacement, we're against people, you know, getting forced out of their neighborhoods. And so now we have two of the five people in the city council who are essentially, you know, kind of on the side of the more leftist activist side of a lot of issues here. So if we get one more person, we could actually, you know, enact some things to put some reins on, like, the rampant gentrification that's been happening. And that's not our goal, like, the end goal, but it will definitely help just with the simple fact of people can stay where they are. They won't have to worry about, like, moving out of the city or moving out of their neighborhood and disrupting their lives. So, you know, there's these basic level things of real politics as well that we got to deal with.
Well, just moving forward, in Portland, the local Symbiosis group is hosting a tenant meeting coming up pretty soon at the end of the month. It looks really interesting. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, first I'll just say that Symbiosis PDX is the first local chapter of the Symbiosis group. We've been meeting since about January, about 3 months or so. We've been having monthly meetings. The idea is to form a coalition of like-minded groups. I mean, that's sort of up for, you know, debate as, like, what fits under that. But so far it's been the DSA Libertarian Socialist Caucus, Demand Utopia, the Foster Pal Lentz Neighborhood Action Council. We've also had people from the IWW and some other local radical groups come to the meetings, kind of feeling out who wants to be part of it. Basically, the idea is to have a monthly place to coordinate action among libertarian socialist leaning groups. And so our first major project that are working together on is this thing called the East Portland Housing Assembly, which will be this event on March 30th in the East Portland Community Center. And we will have a variety of groups that are doing work around housing come together and kind of enact this communalist, libertarian, municipalist idea of these people's assemblies that kind of make decisions around what actions they want to take in their local area. This particular one focusing on housing, gentrification, displacement. So the idea is to have presentation with a few local groups that are already doing work on different tenancies. There'll be Portland Tenants United, which is a tenants union group that fights against raising rents, particularly like at apartment complexes. Like, they have a few campaigns going on where they're even having a rent strike at one of them. They're organizing tenants unions, and they're going to talk about the strategy they're using. We're going to have a group from Living Cully talking about locally controlled tax increment financing, which would basically be kind of be a participatory budgeting thing where the neighborhood would essentially control these urban renewal dollars that are raised, and they could their proposal is that the local groups would decide any money that's raised from that neighborhood would go back into what they want it to go into. And we'll also show a video highlighting Cooperation Jackson, the work they've been doing, particularly around solidarity economy, which is like basically a co-op economy that they've been building there, and also the housing co-ops that they've been building. After that, we'll have breakout groups. We've picked four central like pillars of the work we kind of want to go forward from this assembly. The idea is that it'll be roughly every quarter we'll have another assembly where groups that met the last time can reconvene to talk about what progress they made, and then also plan more actions or whatever campaigns they want to do. The four major tenets we have are anti-displacement work, building a solidarity economy, and anti-displacement work.
Cool.
And so, again, the idea is that like groups that are working in these particular areas will have a chance to talk to each other, see what they're doing. It'll be facilitated discussions. And in those breakouts, we'll talk about what campaigns we could see working together on, what projects like, that maybe isn't part of a campaign, but ongoing like movement building projects. And basically that's the idea.
Well, you brought up housing. What do you think are the other key areas that people could be building dual power around currently in their cities?
I think Mason talked about, or at least Detroit, they have a internet, like a sort of autonomous internet project that's going on. Autonomous power, you know, electricity. I mean, like, you can get really deep. You can get, like, you know, just the basics. Like, what do we all need to survive? You know, food, a food autonomy, health autonomy. Those are things that, you know, I'd say they're being worked on in Rojava. But in terms of other places, there's not a whole lot of examples just because we're kind of caught up in the day-to-day drudgery of capitalism, most of us, at least in this society.
Well, I wanted to turn now towards something that we've been talking about on This Is America, but there's been a lot of excitement recently, it seems, with this idea around universal basic income in the face of automation. We're, of course, very critical of this. But what are your thoughts of the rise of UBI?
As like a proposal with increasing...
Yeah, just in general, or just support? A phenomenon. I mean, there's this new candidate, Andrew Yang, that's running. I'm just curious. I mean, obviously automation like climate change is going to be something that's going to, add to the crisis of everyday life. And I think that that's something that we've all got to be thinking about in terms of, you know, building dual power and alternatives and stuff like that. I'm just curious your thoughts on this.
Well, personally, I think, on the one hand, we have to, kind of be honest about the motivations of, you know, kind of like the tech libertarian billionaires who, hope it will be a, panacea to all social ills, and, you know, recognize that they are very much not our allies. And, you know, that comes with it the recognition that, universal basic income is not sufficient. It doesn't solve the underlying problem of the ownership of the economy, not just who gets paid. And until we have social ownership, we'll still be in a relatively vulnerable position. That being said, I think it is, depending on how it is structured, a potentially productive and progressive non-reformist reform that would give most ordinary people greater freedom and ability to control their lives and more of their time, so as to be more effective as political actors in the world. I think there are lots of other programs that we would want to supplement or be other layers for that safety net in addition to universal basic income. Things like universal basic services, turning universal health care into something like an NHS in the U.S., ensuring that there's publicly provided access to education and food and housing, not just a monthly check for you to pay for that off the private market. And then, obviously, I think a job guarantee is an essential pillar in that kind of social democratic program. The issue I see with a lot of UBI advocates is that they treat it as some kind of universal solution to all kinds of different problems that it just can't be sufficient to solve.
I see it. It may become a necessity of the way capitalism is going with automation for the basic survival of the system itself, because if they undermine their consumer base, then the economy will crash. So I think we basically kind of already have that for older people with Social Security, and I don't think anyone would call that a utopian or a great thing. It would probably be the same thing, is that most people would be barely surviving. And then have their investments or whatever that they'd be getting rich off of. And it could create even more subservience to the system, because now you're completely reliant on, essentially, we're thinking the government would hand it out.
The state would be your boss.
Yeah. If you've ever had food stamps, if you've ever had any government assistance, you have to explain yourself all the time, what are you doing? Why are we giving you this money? And I can doubt that there'd be certain stipulations as well that maybe you don't, want to live in a house. Maybe you want to travel around in a bus or something like that. And how would that work with universal basic income or whatever? It's just it may be a reform that they'll just do because they have to, for the survival of the system. I don't think it will be a liberatory project for us. It may even be, more of an enclosure on our lives.
Yeah. I did we talked about it this Wednesday for This Is America that will probably come out before this show, but just to give you an example, in Kentucky the minimum wage is $7.25. So that's around $1,000. What Yang is proposing is around what you would get if you worked full time. Actually, after taxes, it'd be a little bit less, the pay, but it's, around the same.
And more likely, everything would just get more expensive. That's what I feel you start giving everyone money, it just leads to inflation. The landlords will just charge more, the stores will just charge more. So it's it's not going to be a win, per se. Whereas building a solidarity economy that's out of their control is a much different thing than just
I think
money to spend at Safeway or whatever. Yeah,
I think for all of us, all flavors of autonomous anti-capitalist, I think that's one of the big challenges, is how do we articulate that? Because we have all these people running around saying they're socialists, and really what they're talking about is social democracy and basically moving money around within capitalism to meet people's needs a little bit. But I think to really articulate, having the commons, having the means of existence in control of everyday people. I mean, that is so out of the lexicon, for most people's imaginations. We're really going to have to think about how do we actually argue that, in the public square, in the, in the, and within discourse with everyday people, saying like, look, we're not talking about wages, you know, we're not talking about you know, some different form of capitalism, we're talking about this new thing entirely.
Yeah. I think there's opportunity for that now with all these people who've decided they're socialists in the last couple of years because of Bernie. Like, they don't really know what socialism means. So, like, you know, it was kind of set in stone for the longest time of, like, what socialism meant. A lot of these kind of older parties, they're like, you know, it's like tax the rich. It's like, you know, more funding for this or that. But I think there are a lot of people that are – they finally made the break with capitalism, and, like, they're just looking for better examples and, like, right. You know. If we show that, like, well, you know, socialism isn't just, like, you know, more funding for this or that for libraries or whatever. It's actually, like, controlling your own life. You bring them something like that to them, like, oh, well, maybe that this is – socialism's okay. Then,
right? Right. Well, just moving forward, so a year from now, I'm curious, where do you hope Symbiosis and kind of just all these projects, this confederation is going to be looking back?
That's a great question. I hope that we will have launched something durable that can continue to absorb new community organizations as it grows. That's kind of got. I want us to have the skeleton in place as the movement. That will allow the movement to continue to develop and grow. I would like us to be at the point where we kind of have this North American organizing infrastructure that can be really useful, in particular for helping people just getting started, get their institutions of direct democracy off the ground, and to kind of treat that as our primary purpose, continuing to grow the movement and seed it in places where it's not particularly well developed. And I hope that we, in doing so, achieve a kind of public political visibility that can you know, introduce a bit of a shift in wider political imagination. You know, this is what you two were just talking about a second ago. Of, how do we expand the boundaries of or of other people's political imaginations? And I think there's possibility for building up enough of a visible alternative that those kind of shifts can take place surprisingly quickly. So I don't know if that would happen in 1 year, 5 years, or 10 years, but I hope we're making big strides to get there.
Can I just say for Symbiosis PDX, hopefully, you know, we have, I don't know, 10 or more groups involved. We have, you know, monthly meetings where we're having productive work around campaigns and projects. And yeah, I guess that's all we can really hope for, that, you know, we have more members doing more stuff.
Awesome. And in the show notes, we'll have links to the conference this summer and also some other links to Symbiosis in general, what it is. But anything else that you want to add?
I would like to say that, especially like kind of the idea we have behind East Portland Housing Assembly is that we're trying to do work that appeals to, the average person, that we're not just reaching out to leftist activists, people who identify as that. We're actually reaching out to people with bread and butter issues, and we're putting this kind of communalist, anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist spin on that. So a lot of what we're doing is basic community organizing, but we're just having different conclusions of where to take that. Instead of, we're trying to get this person elected, so you need to do this. We're like, we're trying to build a neighborhood assembly, or we're trying to build a co-op economy in this city or in this neighborhood. And something that we've been doing in the outreach efforts for the housing assembly is actually what we're going to maybe call Soapbox Sundays, But this last Sunday we went out and we actually canvassed a neighborhood, a working class neighborhood in East Portland, telling people about the assembly that was coming up and to try and get them to come out. And we covered, maybe there's like 10 of us or so that covered, you know, a good, I don't know, 20 blocks or so of territory.
Did you wear the green ski masks?
No, we didn't want to frighten people, but we're like,
I'm joking.
Hello neighbor. Are you concerned about housing? And that's the thing about in Portland, this is by far the biggest issue. Almost everyone is worried about housing, even right. if in their own house, even if they've lived in their house that maybe they bought 20 years ago for like $30,000, $40,000, they're still seeing like, you know, even if they own, they're seeing their property taxes go up dramatically. And they're seeing that they're not benefiting from the policies of the city and the Portland Development Commission. So they're enthusiastically supporting, like, yes, like that's great what you guys are doing. I want to be there. I want to help you out. You know, so we're appealing to them on like this basic level, and they're, you know, in one, they're actually being, you know, engaged, which usually when you see a canvasser, it's about they're begging for money.
Right. And
just be like, we're not asking for money. We're asking you to be involved in your neighborhood and in this wider project and in the city. So that's, I think that's something critical that we need to think about is like, reaching people like on a face-to-face basis, like normal people, quote unquote, and also doing coalition building work, like what Symbiosis is doing, what Symbiosis PDX is doing, is that you and your little group can only accomplish so much. But when you start working with other groups and you have like a common purpose and like common projects to work on, that's when stuff really can start to get rolling. It can really make a difference in your locality or even wider, a wider scale.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's exciting. Well, best of luck to you on the Soapbox Sundays. That's really cool. Hopefully at some point you all will write about those experiences because I think that's something that definitely organizing around bread and butter issues, like you were saying, that everybody can kind of relate to is a good way to begin to organize.
Well, one thing I'll leave off with is that we are seeking new member and partner organizations all the time. Basically, member organizations are local groups like Symbiosis PDX, like Cooperation Jackson, that are building, you know, real democracy and solidarity economies in their own community. And then partner organizations or any other kinds of groups that, share our goals and values. And, you know, some of those are national networks like, DSA's Libertarian Socialist Caucus. Some of those are educational groups like the Institute for Social Ecology. You know, basically our internal process is that any new group that needs to that wants to join needs to be approved through our monthly North America wide referenda on this stuff. Participation at the Congress is going to be through organizations. You know, you would have a say in it as a delegate of a group. So If you want to be involved in this, reach out. We'll either help you set up a local organization in your community or bring on board groups you're already a part of, just so we can have as an expansive of a movement community participating in our gathering in September. And, you know, as many voices as possible in that room is what we're shooting for.
Awesome. Thanks so much. And we hope to, you know, hear from you all soon and look forward to the work that's ahead and just hearing how that goes.
Thanks for having us.
Sounds good.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.